Hey guys, real quick before we start, this episode will contain spoilers for Australian Survivor Titans vs. Rebels. We discussed the winner a few times, so if you haven't watched it yet, don't listen. Enjoy. Cheers.
Is this Survivor? What? Bro, are you listening to Survivor? Guys, I think this is Survivor. Dude, you must really like Survivor.
All right, hello Survivor fans, and welcome to another episode of the Buffs, Blindsides and Banter podcast, a podcast made by superfans with superfans for superfans. Today I'm your host, Mac, and you guess right, Buckle's not here again. You're probably thinking, is it time to hold interviews for a new guest host? And the answer is yes, and today I have someone to fit the bill, our first applicant. He is the host of Sydney Survivor. It is the great Eli Maynard. Eli, how are you?
I'm pretty all right. Yeah, I've applied to take Buck's role, so we'll just see how it goes. We'll see how this little session runs down.
Mate, already you're head and shoulders above him, just in that little sentence. So you're doing great. Keep it going. Hopefully this podcast will put you in good stead. I don't know where he is. He's off for the weekend. It's an Easter weekend, that's fair. How was your Easter, Eli? You have a good time with the family?
Yes, I did. Very busy because my dad's birthday fell on the Saturday, but in general, pretty all right. Not too bad.
A bit stressful. Okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
That happens. We wish you a happy Easter to all our listeners out there. Now, before we get started, the last time we spoke to you was back in May of 2023. It's a long time ago, really, almost a year. And at the time, you were getting ready for Sydney Survivor Season 1 airing, I'm pretty sure it was. What have you been up to since then? How did that go? How did season one go?
Season one was good. Got a lot of positive feedback, considering that it was pretty much edited just by myself. So yeah, it was obviously amateur production, but feedback was really good. Viewership was awesome. I think that first episode hit like 10K viewers, which is insane for a first season LRG. And then, yeah, since then, what have I been doing? I mean, in personal life, just working, grinding away. I've moved out of home this year, so that's a big, stressful but exciting step. Moved from the mountains to the inner west. And we also filmed season two of Sydney Survivor as well, so that'll be out later this year. And did a bit of travel as well, continuing just living my travel lifestyle. I keep thinking about my next trip, but I'm just so broke at the moment trying to, save while moving out. Well,
Living in Sydney will do that to you, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. I think, maybe I'll go on another trip anyway, because screw it. Not getting a house anytime soon. I may as well just keep traveling. Mate, do it while you're young.
That's it. You're a young man. You're about to be a host of a podcast. Like, the world's at your feet. Go out there. It's for the world.
Exactly. A younger and fresher face. Take it all on.
Yeah, cool. So we might spend a bit of time at the end of the episode talking a bit more about Sydney Survivor and where that's at for the upcoming season and potentially season three, I think. But we'll do that at the end. Let's stick to season 46. Now, it's been a pretty divisive season, I suppose. Coming off the heels of 45 being, arguably the best season of the new era. That's how we ranked it, myself and Buckles. And a bit of a slow start to 46, based around one character, Barnu. Can you sort of give me some thoughts? I mean, I spoke last week in depth about Barnu and what I thought, and I'm probably done with that. But I guess you're fresh today. Can you talk to me about Barnu and I guess 46 as a whole, where it's going? Is it going to be good? Do you like this season? Like, where are you at?
Yeah. Mac, obviously, my thoughts on New Era Survivor, but here I am on a podcast still talking about it, so I must not hate it too much. I mean, it is hard. I admittedly am struggling to watch the episodes live. I don't think for the past three or four seasons I've watched more than maybe three or four episodes live, and a lot of those are probably the finale. So it's tough. New Era Survivor is tough for me. I just think that they're not nailing the casting, making it shorter isn't working. The whole Beware advantages and the journeys and just everything that they're trying to do, it's just not hitting the mark. I I get it. They're trying, but it's not that hard just to go back to what they were doing before because that was proven to be loved. So anyway, in terms of Barnu, I am a fan. And like you, I defend him. He won my heart. But in reflection, since I think he was pretty like over-edited, there was some stats coming out that he had more confessionals than like five or six winners of their season. And one of those winners happened to be Parvati, the fucking Parvati. He had more confessionals in his, what was it, three, four episodes?
Wow, four episodes, yeah.
Than Parvati did in her entire winning season. And that to me is like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. But in general, I like the guy. I thought he was fun, you know, he's relatable. Horrible Survivor player. I hope we don't see him again, but I do feel like they will bring him back. But look, yeah, like he won my heart in the sense that, you know, I wanted him to do well. I wanted him to stick around. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't know what the thinking is casting wise on that, and a lot of choices, to be honest, over the last few seasons.
Yeah.
And the season as a whole, slow, very slow. This episode, which obviously we'll get to, was a lot better in my opinion, but okay. Yeah, still not hitting the mark at all. Like, you know, I'm talking like this is like a 6 out of 10 max. Like it's just. Considering what we've just seen, yeah, well, that's it. Considering what we've just seen from Australian Survivor, even UK Survivor, like US Survivor, it's just not doing it. It's not doing it. But
no,
as you say, it's still fun. And there's a couple of really good characters that I'm liking. I'm loving Venus for multiple reasons. I'm loving Q. There's a couple of others that aren't too bad. I didn't mind. I haven't minded Charlie at some points, but I don't know. Yeah, and I think Tevin as well, Hunter. There's a few that I sort of vibe with, but in terms of just like the old sort of, you don't get your Tysons, your Boston Robs, you know, your Parvies, your Sandras, those kind of characters anymore, even your Rupids.
Well, Barney was a Rupert, I would say. That's how I label it.
Yeah, I guess. I saw something today about bringing back sort of the idea of recruiting cast. Now, I'm obviously against recruiting from the perspective of like, hey, I am a fan. I want to play Survivor, and that's taking a fan spot. But Australian Survivor does it so well, particularly last season where they really split it up between applicants and like recruits. And I think the US should really take a plug out of that book because, like, I'm not totally against, like, bringing some D-list celebrities that don't know the game of Survivor because, honestly, it makes it more entertaining. So, yeah.
Yeah, no.
We saw that in Sydney Survivor Season 1. It was, you know, we had someone who knew nothing about the game and it made it entertaining for an LRG. So there you go. Like, I think it's necessary even if Probes doesn't want to admit to it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been banging this drum for a while, saying that you need that sort of lesser game player so the better game players can use them as a pawn in the game and advance their game and do some fun stuff strategically with numbers. What I will say just about your overall thoughts, look, there's plenty of time left in the season. We're sort of over the Barnu part of the season, which I loved, and we're past that now. Let's move on. Let's not be negative. As much as we don't enjoy the new era as much, let's just appreciate it for what it is and try and have a positive podcast today because, you know, we tend to get a little bit negative about US Survivor because we try and compare it to what we've just seen on Titans versus Rebels. You know, arguably, number one season of all time. So it'd be stupid to compare it to the best season ever because nothing competes with that. It is the best season ever. So let's compare it to itself and just try and enjoy it every week as the episodes come, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to go about it. And look, I've seen worse seasons of Survivor.
Oh,
so,
no doubt, no doubt. Well, let's get into the episode. Let's talk about Jem, you know, going home with the idol in her pocket. She sort of came out of the gates this week, especially, I thought, quite aggressively with her approach toward people. What was your sort of thoughts on Jem overall, and where do you sort of think it went wrong for Jem?
Yeah, I think this was like the classic case of like playing hard, like playing too hard too early. It's really interesting because I was a bit like shocked by this kind of boot in terms of the fact that like what we saw early, like the first, you know, few episodes, I was like, she's kind of getting this kind of important player that might make it to the end slash winner's boot, winner's edit, sort of. I wasn't sure. I'm getting that from, like, Venus and Hunter and and Tevin a little bit too, and I'll get into that later. But I definitely saw early game. I was like, yeah, you know, Gem's probably one to watch. So this was, like, this episode was a bit like, ooh, hold on a second. It just kind of switched completely. As soon as she started, like, you know, asking everyone where they're voting and, you know, even from the start, I guess, with the whole Beware advantage, though, I mean, and that was a couple episodes ago, even that might not have been the smartest idea. So, yeah, I think it was just her kind of trying to push names, well, not even push names, just find out where other people are voting. And, you know, in honesty, yeah, she probably, that tribe was kind of unbreakable in a sense, and I think she probably pushed the girls thing a little bit too hard. But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because in my opinion, it was just the classic case of just going too hard too fast, and, you know,
I somewhat agree. Like, last week we spoke about the Beware advantage and her plan with that, and I thought just even then was overplaying. It was trying to cause fractures in an alliance that you didn't need to have when you're a tight group of six that hasn't been to a vote yet. And then the same thing this episode. Like, she's super aggressive with Ben and Tim in the way she approaches them and the way she talks to them about, like, don't lie to me, I want to vote with you guys. And to me, that approach is okay if you're in the merge and you need to, like, get down to it and you need, like, firm answers. But for all the people, despite that it's, like, day 11 or 10 or something, this is their first vote. So to them, it's almost like day one. They haven't voted together. They don't know where the lines are. And when someone's so aggressive and so, I guess, really firm in what they want in a response, it comes across as a bit threatening to yourself. You know, you don't want someone to be firm. You want someone to be easygoing, easy to deal with, like a Ben, you know, a bit of charismatic, just laid back, chilled out. I want to vote with that person. I don't want the person who's in my face telling me, who are you voting with? I will vote with you. I want to be on the right side of the numbers. That's so strong so early. And I think that was sort of what sealed the deal.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's interesting just having a think about it. And this is a very strange comparison, but she actually kind of reminds me of how Michael from Heroes vs. Villains played. I think his name was Michael. That guy, yes. That third boot or something. It was so
early boot.
Keen to get George out. And it was that same sort of aggressive style where it's like, you know, if you just sat back a little bit, like, you wouldn't have been a target. But the fact he was just so in people's face, and we've seen this before. Like, and you're right, this is okay if you're in a merge situation. You know, you can even, to a degree, this is the way that, like, King George plays, right, in Australian Survivor. We've even seen the likes of, like, Tony, Boston, Rob, you know, classic US Survivor players play like that kind of style. But it's never, like, this early in the game. So I think that it was just a classic case of just, yeah, pushing people too much when this group was already, like, pretty tight. She just gave a reason to be the outsider, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you have to know your audience. Like, who are you talking to? The way she sort of went at Tim and said, you know, like, I'm not tight with anybody, even you, Tim. I don't have any friends here. And then I know that you're tight with Ben. I know you two are an alliance. And we're talking about alliances, and it's a girls' alliance, and this alliance, you're with Ben. And it's like, they haven't had a vote yet. These alliances are all made up until you put pens to parchment. So just that really strong-arming sort of people and saying, I know where the things are. And when Ben comes up to her and she's like, he's like, oh, you know, I'm friends with Tim. And she's like, don't lie to me. This is Gem. You can't lie to me. And it's like, wow, this is so strong. Like I said, if it was later on in the game, that sort of approach, I actually don't mind it. I think it's nice to be, like, forthright with what you want to happen and, like, really let your opinions be known. But this early on, you sort of just have to be easygoing, because that's the people want to align with, easygoing people. They don't want anyone to be too rigid. You know, they want everyone to be flowy, go with the flow. I'm cool to vote this person. All good. We're an alliance, and that's how it is. They don't want people to be too overbearing, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's the vibe I'm getting from Ben and Charlie, in the sense that, like, they're just kind of, like, not really pushing too super hard, which is important. And I think your Survivor, comparative to other Survivors, is very easy to make the merge. I think, like, you have to really be playing like a Gem to kind of, you know, miss out on the merge, in my opinion. Like, especially, this is new era Survivor I'm talking, so, you know, there's no swap. You've just got to be with the numbers and, you know, not play stupid, I suppose, right?
Well, that's the thing. There's only 5 votes to the merge, and it's like, exactly. If one Janu's lost 3 of the challenges, there's a medivac. It's 1 vote, and you're there. Like it was just there for the taking. It's not that hard, like you said. If you can just play a basic game early on, but I do think. You know, we saw Jem do it last week. She wants to make good TV. She wants to do things. You want to be known. You don't want to be this player who tried to go under the radar and then still got voted out. So I would rather you swing for the fences and fail than do nothing and still get voted out. So I can't blame her as much for that.
I get that. I totally do. But we have seen players capable of doing both, and that's what separates the good players and the bad. I'm trying to think of a US example, obviously, because it's the US season, but
in terms of Shannon Ricard, you know, early on in the new era.
Absolutely. Yes. Or like in Oz, I was thinking like even Ferris, most recent season, David in All Stars, big in front of the camera. But if you actually break down and watch their gameplay, they're very good socially. They're very quiet, like a bit more laid back. Relaxed. While Jem, it just felt like she was very much just like, what you see is what you get. Interesting though, what I notice, a lot of people say if I ever played, I'd be first boot. Watching the season, and particularly Jem, I can actually like accurately point out like where, kind of, in my opinion, where people have gone wrong. I think most fans can do that, but I think watching this show, like watching this current season, made me realize, like, if I was chucked on an island with a bunch of strangers, like, obviously, if I'm playing with people I know, I probably would be first boot. But if I was, you know, with a bunch of strangers, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't play like Jem. Like, I'm pretty sure I would be able to make the merge just based on these, like, pre-merge boots we've seen in this season and particularly New Era Survivor. Like, I just feel like they've really given themselves a reason to be voted out. Like, Jelinski, man, Banu, like, just,
yeah.
It's very,
Jess,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, Jess as well. Like, it's just, I just feel like it's very easy to make the merge in New Era US Survivor, and I'm finding it, like, pretty crazy. Like, obviously, you know, this is just from me as a fan. I don't know what it's like actually being there, but yeah, I just feel like you can kind of accurately point out the errors here and be like, well, that seems like you could have just stayed back and, you know, be patient. Just get to the merge. Do that at the merge. I mean, you know, maybe you don't want to win, but have some fun, but you can do that later, you know?
Yeah, I guess people get a bit trigger happy. They're like, oh, yeah, well, I'm on Survivor. And, you know, like I said, they've been playing for 12 days at this point, but it's only their first vote. So she might have just been excited to do something. And I guess, like, you're a host of Sydney Survivor. You've seen 2 seasons play out in front of you. Do you think people can come into the game and change who they are early on to just float by and to get to a point where they can start a play? Is that something that people do? Is it easy, do you think?
I think, but even then, watching particular people, particularly in season 2 and, like, how they played, and I don't think that they really changed that much. I mean, yeah, some people do float under the radar a bit earlier on just so that they can play harder later. But in general, you do find that people would just play hard from the get-go, those particular personalities. So, I mean, I guess it's a fair point. Maybe people just aren't capable of toning it back, but...
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like she had everything set for her just to take a back seat here. She's got an idol. There's no need to just worry. Just settle. Be chill. But, yeah, I think she was just a little bit too aggressive. And, you know, again, maybe if she wasn't sure about where Ben and Tim were voting, just play the idol. Like, even if it's incorrect, I don't believe in an incorrect idol play. I know you share similar thoughts about that, Mac. I don't feel like if someone plays an idol, and even if it is incorrect, I don't think it's actually ever really properly an incorrect idol play. Because if you don't feel safe, unless you're playing it on someone else, of course, but if you don't feel safe and you're playing it on yourself, if that gets you to the next round and that makes you feel secure, then fair play to you. Fair play.
Especially at this point of the game where we're 1 vote away from merge. And everyone knows it because the new era is exactly the same. We do the fake merge next week. But I guess that lends the question, if she didn't, like, what has Ben and Tim told her? Who are they voting for? Like, have they told her a different name? And then, which brings me to my question to you, have Maria and Charlie, they've sold this to Jem that they're with her, have they gone the right way, do you think? Do you think going with the boys over Mariah and Jem was the right idea, or was going with Tim and Ben the correct move, do you think?
I mean, I'm skeptical on Tim, and I'll get to that. I think Ben is actually just a laid-back dude. I would go with Ben because I just don't see him. They're all talking about how he's a big social threat, but, like, if someone's that obviously a social threat, like, no one's going to take him to the end. And I'll say it on record, Ben won't make it to the end of this game.
He's my winner pick. He's my winner pick.
Well, there you go. I mean, he's a perceived threat. And, you know, if he does make to the end, fair credit to him. But I personally just don't think people would take him to the end. So if I am, you know, Maria, I'm going, well, like, we can take him out later. He's actually pretty laid back, though. He's pretty chill. He's not really causing a fuss now. He's not a threat now. While with Jem, you just don't want to take those people to the merge. There's been a lot of, like, pre-merge boots that we've seen in previous seasons where it's just been the case of, like, not wanting to take that person anywhere further because they're just unpredictable. And I feel like Jem is kind of that unpredictable kind of player. I'm trying to use a US example, but I can't think of one again, so I will use Heroes of Villains with Stevie getting voted out pre-merge and Kelly from Oz Titans vs. Rebels. Like, those kind of players, they're, like, you know, entertaining, you know, but you just don't know.
Erratic.
Yeah, and I feel like I kind of got that vibe from her. As I said, I compared to her to Michael, so, you know.
Yeah, I think Michael's a pretty good comparison. He was pretty intense in just his conversations and that. I personally think they made the right call. I think going with Ben, when everyone has said this episode, how charismatic he is. He's the greatest guy in the world. He's going to win this game. He's super charming. These are all great things, and they also make him a bit of a shield for you. So if Sega get targeted by the other two tribes, yeah, if that actually happens, he might be the first one to get picked off because he is so likable. Like, even through the TV screen, there's something about him that, after watching one episode, I made him my winner pick because I'm like, I love this guy. He's so fun. He's so cool. He's so laid back. And having that shield in front of you is great. He's got this carefree attitude, which makes you think that he's not the smartest game player. Now, I don't know if he is, but from what we've seen, he just seems like a cool dude. So he might not be the smartest survivor player. And also this carefree attitude, it sort of has this air of loyalty about it. Like, oh, I'm just going to stay with you guys because I'm not doing anything else. So for me, it was the right call to go with was Ben especially. Tim, I'm not so sure about. Tim's a bit harder to read and where his sort of motives lie, but I guess we can get into that. But I guess just off Ben, the question I have is, yeah, we've said he's a social threat. We see Kenzie on the Jarnu tribe is the big social threat of the game, and they're all, you know, when she makes merge, what's going to happen? When's the time to get rid of the social threat? Do you want to keep them into merge if you're aligned with them? Do you want to get rid of them pre-merge? Like, what's the ideal time to sort of take these people out that are so charismatic, they're so charming, that everyone loves them? When do you think is the optimal time to get rid of them?
Well, it's actually great because these are normally the type of players that haven't been targeted in Survivor. Yeah. It's normally been the strategic players or the challenge beast. And they're the social players, you know, your Kim Sprouting, like those kind of players, or Denise to an extent as well. Like, they're the kind of players that end up winning the game, right? And I think people, it's been really great. That's the one thing I will say that's been good about New Era Survivor. It's actually, like, picking out these players that have been, you know, very good socially and trying to target them a little bit earlier. And look, it's an interesting one because take it a step back, for example. When's the best time, and I'll get you to answer this too, like, when's the best time to take out a challenge beast, right? I mean,
well, everyone would say just before merge.
Exactly, or at the merge. But then it's like, well, hold on a second. What a challenge – like, a lot of the time these challenge beasts, like, aren't really that amazing socially or strategically. So really all they're doing is stopping you from winning an immunity necklace. But if you're a social player, you want to keep those players around. And then strategic players, like, is it really a strategic move to get out the challenge beast? So I think, I guess it just depends what type of player you are, but I definitely do think that, like, those kind of threats is kind of like, you can definitely take them through the first few votes of the merge before you start thinking about taking them out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's been a bit of a meta shift over the past, I don't know, it could be like up to 15 seasons-ish of the physical challenge piece is not a threat to win the game anymore. The days of Aussie running to the end with Yule, and even it didn't even win that season, but like the challenge piece going to the end and winning is not really on anyone's radar. So I do think losing them just before merge is not that important. They're a good shield to have, you know, late into the merge, where when they finally lose, we can vote for them and you're one step closer. I think the meta shift we've seen, especially in the last couple of seasons, is the big social threat. Everyone's so scared of him. Caleb, you know, personifies that last season. This big guy who was so charismatic, and he had a bit of a challenge thing about him as well, but he was so likable, and he was a salesman, and he was, everyone loved him, and they're like, we have to get this guy out before Caleb. Who doesn't love Caleb? He's a great guy. Because, yeah, we felt that through the TV. Imagine being out there with him. And they all felt that. And it was like, we need to get rid of this guy before he runs it to the end. Now, I think because of this meta shift, everyone knows that now. So I think you could probably hold on to these people till a bit deeper in the merge and make them like one of the last couple of vote outs to say, hey, I've got this shield in front of me. I'm going to use him right to the end, right when I can pop up at the end and make the final tribal council. Because I think timing a run to the end now is so important for the players that win. There's always a goat that gets taken in the end, and there's always the player that wins needs that shield right to the last moment to take them out and then become the next biggest threat, and that's how they win. So I do think the social players can be kept a bit longer than perhaps we're seeing. Everyone's sort of talking about this threat level, but I'm thinking take them down to 7 and 6, and you're only one step away, one immunity win away from being in the final three.
Yeah, I agree. I particularly if they're not, I mean, I don't know what Ben, for example, is like in challenges, but if they're not particularly, like, that great challenge-wise, then, like, yeah. you literally can just take him out later in the game. Like, I just, you know, they're probably, one, a good shield, and two, like, probably someone that's going to be a good ally most of the time. I mean,
yeah.
Social threats aren't necessarily known to be the most backstabbing strategic sort of players, right? Sometimes they can be, but... You know.
It's hard because social threats, the fact that they're social threats means they have options. So I guess they're not, are they the backstabby type to make a plan against you? Maybe not. But the fact that people come to them with plans and you hear both sides of the fence and you get to make a decision, I think that's what a social threat is. People that are in the middle and they get all the information and can make the decision based on that. They know where all the votes are going in every vote and they can vote either the correct way or the way that is best benefit to them. So I think that's the upside of being the big social threat. Yeah, you know, having people want to work with you. You know, they don't want to vote you out. You're sort of insulated in that way as well, where it's hard to get blindsided by people because everyone wants to work with you. And when you're that workable asset for everyone, it's so hard to get people on board to get rid of that person because, you know, oh, they're with me. Oh, but they're with me as well. But, you know, they're with everyone else. So no one wants to jump on that.
Yeah, I agree with you there for sure.
All right, before we just leave the Seeker tribe completely, I mean, there's a couple of mistakes here. I thought the girls have this plan. Maria's got an extra vote, and we'll get there in a second, to put 3 on Ben, 2 on Tim to flush Tim's idol. Is my maths completely wrong? Was this a horrible plan to flush an idol with the minority vote?
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
I'm
not even sure what, yeah. And I don't even think, like, Tim really... felt at threat, in my opinion. I mean, he obviously doesn't have this idol, but it also just, like, he didn't feel at threat, so clearly it wasn't executed well at all. And obviously, no. Jem goes home because of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think someone's going to idol, put the majority of votes on them, and if they don't play it, the idol goes with them. To put the minority on them, it sort of didn't make sense. And then I guess the biggest blunder of the episode for me, Maria's extra vote. Why is she playing this extra vote? They've got, you know, they've got herself, Charlie, and Tim voting for Jem. Jem and Mariah voting for Ben. Ben's vote, we're not sure if he has it, not sure if he doesn't, from their point of view. So why is the need to have this extra vote? It was 3-2. I'm not sure who they thought was not with them because, I mean, Tim has every intention to vote with them, and Charlie and Maria were so tight. Like, I think it was a huge waste, huge blunder in the game for Maria.
Yes and no, I agree with you. Definitely, like, okay, yeah, maybe because she's so tight with Charlie that, because I was thinking maybe Charlie, she might not fully think that Charlie's on board, but obviously they're super tight, and obviously Charlie's tight with Ben, he didn't want to vote Ben. So yeah, I agree in that extent, but I think where I disagree is how many times do extra votes get played incorrectly? Like, I know she technically didn't play it correct, but I guess she did, right? And I just think it's one of those advantages that, like, is it that amazing? It might work, but how often is it that important to have that extra vote? And I just think if I'm her, like, why not? You know, otherwise it's just something that's just weighing her bag down, in my opinion. It's one of those advantages that if I played, I would hate to have. I just think it's
really,
yeah, it's just not something that I'm a big fan of watching it, but just if I played and being a player, I'm not sure how I would use it best. And I think, you know, yeah, it's probably not needed here, but you know,
like, yeah, I think the extra vote, it obviously has specific circumstances where it can be fatal, I guess. This was not one of them. When you have the numbers clearly, there was no one flipping. It seemed to us, at least. Why not hold on to it? It might not ever pay off for you, but there might be a situation where you're in a tied vote, in a deadlocked vote, and you think, we have that extra vote. Like, I'm not one person. I'm actually two people now because I have an extra vote. Like, it can be so valuable. I know in Survivor history, it has almost never paid off, but that shocks me still to this day that no one's been able to work it to a point where, you know, where one vote makes a difference. I mean, I know we get a lot of pile-on votes nowadays. There's never like a war this side versus this side. I guess we just saw a lot in Titans versus Rebels, but in a normal Survivor season, it's a lot of like consensus votes. People get on the same page. People don't want to have sides, I guess. They want like a sort of fluid gameplay, but I do think it can come in handy at many stages down the track. All right, let's move on to the journey we saw tonight. We love a good journey in Survivor New Era especially. What did you think of Q's idea for this, you know, these three boys, you know, Q, Tim and Hunter, to sort of each pick a partner, and when they get to merge, that's six, and that's majority. Is this going to work?
Look, Mac, there's so many circumstances and instances where we've seen this in Survivor, and how often does it work? Look, maybe sometimes it'll last a vote and that's it. But look, I think this is really like a big statement from Q, and I'm actually really liking Q. He's definitely going to be one of my favorite new era like players, like from trying to teach Barnu, trying to protect Barnu, you know, now to this. He's just, you know, and he's entertaining in his confessionals. I'm really enjoying what we're seeing from him. And then, you know, he just made this big statement where he's like, you know what, we're good at challenges. Let's just get our closest buddies, work together at the merge. Look, I don't think it'll pay off, but I'm loving it. I really did like it. I was just like, you know, this is a couple of my, you know, favorite players so far, and they're trying to do something, which I really like. I don't know if it's the best move, like, because what's stopping Hunt from going back to his tribe being like, yo, Q is playing hard? Like, that fair play. They know that the merge is coming up, and this is your time to go on the journey and make those connections, and I think he might have started something we're yet to see.
For someone in Q's position, when he's meeting Hunter and Tim, he's in a position of I guess, weakness. He's coming in a tribe of three who are losing all the time. So I don't think it would come across as overplaying, because it comes across as desperate almost. And I guess desperate people at this point of the game can be trusted somewhat because they need numbers. So for Hunter and Tim, maybe this is a viable option. But I think whether it was intentional or unintentional, Q has now, I guess, revealed who Hunter's tightest alliance is and who Tim's tightest alliance is, because they told him. They gave him names. Tevin, I'm with Tevin. And Tim's like, I got Maria. She's with me. She got an extra vote. We're tight as. We're parents. So whether or not he plans to that, I'm not sure. But the fact that he now has this information about these two people and where they sit in their, I guess, their tribes and who their tightest person is, that's huge value, like huge valuable information he can use at the merge, maybe either with them or against them.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's what I mean. Like, from at first glance, it's like, oh, this is a bit of a bold play, but I actually am 100% for what he's done here. And, you know, definitely one of my contenders for buff of the week, but we'll get to that later. But I just found, like, you know, if he's done the right thing, you know, maybe if he's in someone else's position, so maybe if this is Hunter bringing this up or even Tim bringing this up, you know, where they do have that numeric advantage, maybe it's not as smart. But I think you're right. From him coming, you know, they're going into the merge as a tribe of three. what's wrong with this? Nothing. I think this is great. He's just trying to forge some early bonds, and I think this will definitely pay off. Now, I'm not saying Q's going to go win the game, but I think that at least he's had this conversation that he can definitely revisit when they make the merge. Hey, what's important, I think, now is what is his next step? Where does he go from here? How does he play this? How do all three of these guys play this? I think that's where this becomes important and where we can sort of fully judge.
Yeah, it's hard because if you're Tim or Hunter and you're in this position of power because you have the numbers somewhat, I want those people on the bottom. I want them to come to me because, one, they won't target me, and, two, it gives me more numbers. So I think they're probably open to it, but the fact that he's asked both of them, who are on separate sides in a way, they can't all be happy days. Like, we can't all have the Nami tribe plus Q and his two plus Tim and his two. Like, they're not all going to happen. So there needs to be a divide somewhere. And I guess it's whoever convinces Q and Tiff to come with them first will win the first vote of the merge. That's sort of how I see it going. So it's interesting to see if it pays off. Obviously, in Survivor, if someone approaches you with a plan, the answer is always yes. You have to be open to everything. And even if you don't like it, pretend that you like it. This is a great plan. We're going to work together. And, you know, feed the bullshit, I guess. So I think everyone has sort of played this well. I don't think it will pay off, but I guess in a way it'll work for either Hunter or Tim, whoever's sort of the first to sort of approve the plan and get it over with their tribe, I suppose. All right. So, after all this, I guess, alliance, kerfuffle, we get to Hunter's challenge at the journey. What do you think of the challenge? Like, you would have aced this, no doubt.
I don't know, actually.
Oh, really?
It's funny because I was doing it. I was doing it. I'm obviously a massive super fan. I've watched every single season of Survivor. I don't know. Like, I was thinking I probably got maybe 16, 17 of these right. So this is me, such a massive fan. It's tough. I don't know. Because I personally did watch it in chronological order mostly, but I did kind of skip to popular seasons at the time when I was watching it with my girlfriend at the time. And so it was kind of like a bit jumpy here and there. But I just think, like, it's still hard because you can put together, okay, like Pearl Islands was just before All Stars, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, I remember fans' worst favorites like season 25, Redemption Island, blah, blah, blah. Followed Nicaragua in the greatest season ever. which was after Heroes vs. Villains, one of the worst seasons ever. I could put like most of them together, but even me, I think like a couple there definitely I couldn't get.
Yeah, I mean.
And I'm just thinking, this is tough. Like, only the biggest super fans could get this. This is a little bit harsh on Hunter. I reckon, like, not every applicant is a super fan, and even us, like, super fans are not going to get this. Like, I just feel like, I don't know, they could have made it a little bit easier. Maybe make it 10 instead of 20.
Oh, okay.
Or you only have to get 50. I don't know. What do you think? No. I just feel like it was a bit difficult. Like, and it's like, okay, like, you get an advantage or you lose your vote. It's like, I get it. They're meant to be tough, but I don't know. It just didn't make it easy for Hunter, I reckon.
I mean,
the fact you're 8 out of 20, like, it's not amazing, is it?
No, well, 8 out of 20 is not 8 out of 20 because if you get one wrong, you actually get two wrong. So it's closer than he was. Like, it seems like, oh, you got 12 wrong.
True.
But you got six wrong, essentially. Like, once you get one out of order, it's spiraling. It's even in you listing them off
like
there,
that.
You had a few mistakes, which, maybe I take my super fandom for granted. Some of the late 20s, early 30s, I get a little bit mixed up exactly where they fit, but I think given a few minutes, I could work it out. But I guess, Hunter, we see this Hunter as this guy with challenges in his garage. He's got all this stuff, and even he gets it wrong. So, I mean, you're a bit depleted, perhaps. Yeah, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I thought it was quite fun just to see that. Because, like, that's something all the fans can relate to, and they could probably do it.
Right.
If they showed us on the screen maybe a bit longer, we could actually do it. It was quite quick, but it was a bit of fun.
I actually paused it just so I could play along, but I agree. It was fun, and I like the nostalgic aspect of it for sure.
Yeah, what did you think about the self-reverence, like the flashbacks to all these seasons as he's discussing them? Like, I feel like because this new era cops a lot of hate, like, they had to show us, like, no, we're a good show once upon a time. Like, people loved us.
Yeah, I honestly, that's how I felt. Like, they were, like, trying to, like, shove it in her face. And then it just made me sad, like, seeing, like, Tyson. I'm like, fuck, man. Like, when's the last time we had a Tyson? Like,
yeah.
like I want those characters back, and I think that's kind of the, you know, they've kind of shot themselves in the foot.
There's been a lot of flashbacks, especially, like, the last two seasons. I think we saw a Stephen and JT flashback last season, a Boston Rob one, even this season, a Malcolm Denise already, and then this whole series of flashbacks. It's like they're almost proving to us, like, yeah, like, there's a reason you guys are here. The good times, we had those times. Like, well, you know, you can bring them back. You know, you can make it what it was again. But, yeah, let's not get negative. Let's not get negative. Let's stay positive. We're on a roll here. now, something I want to move on to, which I'm not a huge believer, or not believer, I guess. I don't know a whole lot about it. And it's called EGIC, which is edit logic. Is that correct? Yes. You're an EGIC man.
That is correct.
Can you tell me, through your EGIC reading eyes, which I do not have, who's winning this season, do you think? Where's this going?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, eh? Because, like I said earlier, I thought Jem was getting, like, a really good sort of edit first couple episodes, and then boom. Like, completely just flipped the switch this episode. Yeah. So, look, I'm not just doing this because I love Venus, but I do think she's definitely in with a red hot shot here.
Right.
Although a little less visible this episode, but I don't think you necessarily have to be visible every episode to win the game. But yeah, I'm definitely thinking the likes of Hunter, Tevin, and Venus at this stage, just based on how I see how previous seasons have been edited and how winners are edited. Last season, I picked D from, like, the first couple of episodes. And I kind of got similar kind of vibes of Venus, but I could be completely wrong. I do think she'll go quite far. Not sure if she will win. But they definitely, like, you got to look at it as, like, who are they pushing in our face?
Mm.
We're getting a lot of Charlie, I feel.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, if it's just, like, a character that's kind of, they're trying to, you know, show this kind of different, like, all-American kind of boy next door. Look at us diversifying our cast.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a winner to me. He doesn't have that look about him.
He doesn't. But they are pushing particular characters in front of us. I feel like Hunter's in with the shot here. I feel like Tevin. I feel like Venus. These guys are getting a fair amount of screen time. But, yeah, I think it's hard. Like, it's compared to other seasons, this has been pretty difficult. Like, it's also down to, like, things as simple as, like, what music is playing when the confessionals are on. What does Jeff say when it zooms into this particular person's face? And it's actually super interesting because I noticed something in the very first episode which makes me think maybe it's not Venus, is Jeff goes, what, like, there's people here that are just doomed to not win the game or something along those lines. You might remember him saying, like, they can do everything in their power, but this game's just not going to be them to win. And it actually showed Venus's face. And I'm like, hold on a second. Like, is this showing us that, you know, she's going to make it to the end and be a losing finalist? Like, you know, I read into stuff like that. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong. That's the fun thing about EGIC. And yeah, it's a very difficult season to, like, kind of analyze who is actually going to come up on top.
Yeah.
I think a lot of fans are feeling that way too. Like, a lot of people online I've been seeing are saying Venus, but, like, after that episode, definitely a lot less visible. So who knows?
Yeah, look, and that's what you want. You want it unpredictable. And I guess I've got two questions. I don't really want to spend too much time on this because it's a bit of a niche subject. But the questions I have is, one, is visibility with the three-tribe format, is it a lot harder to read, and is it as important because sometimes there's not enough time to see all three tribes? And two, how much does what the other players say about players come into it? Is that important when we see a lot of positive talk for Ben? Is that a good thing in terms of his edit, or is that a bad thing?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually. Definitely the second point there. I think the first one, you're absolutely right. That's why I wouldn't be so concerned about, say, a Tevin or a Venus, who I've said are, you know, front runners here. I wouldn't be concerned about that episode based on the fact that, well, they won the immunity challenge. You know, they don't really need to be shown that much, really. Like, what's happening over there? They're winning. Like, you know, there's only so much you can shove into people's face without, you know, making it too obvious. So I think fair call on that one. Yeah, so I think with the second point, definitely, I think definitely it does matter what other, like how much other people are saying about you. So I think that's very good for Ben's edit. Maybe you're right. I didn't even pick that up. So good call out there. I'm pretty sure from memory, D was kind of that kind of person that people were talking about a lot. Like, oh, I love D, blah, 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 blah. We actually saw this. I don't know if you picked this up, but I picked it up. And this is why I was kind of like, oh, Ferris is going to win this game because of the way that people were talking about Ferris. And it was interesting. He wasn't really negatively talked about too much, even by people that were trying to get him out. Like, they would say he's a massive threat. That's not necessarily a bad thing in terms of, like, an edit point of view. It's just, it's even, if anything, it's building up more of the fact that this person potentially might win the game. So I think it's very important, and I think that that may be a clue. We haven't seen a lot of it yet, but I, again, like, this was one of those things earlier in the game where a lot of people were talking about Venus, and it was like, okay, Venus is in danger. Hold on a second. No, she's not. Like,
yeah.
And it's similar with Ben here. Ben's in danger. Oh no, we don't want to vote out Ben. I love Ben. Everyone likes Ben. It's that same thing. And you might be right on the money here. I think as well, like, just because someone's not getting a confessional, if they're being talked about or they're in conversations, then quite visible, right? Yeah, and I think that's what Edgic sometimes misses.
No, that's fair. And thanks for chatting about that. Just, yeah, out of all the information you've absorbed and read, do you have a winner pick?
Yeah, I'm still going Venus.
Still going Venus. Okay.
Still going Venus. Yeah, I think I will be satisfied with my readings if it's out of her, Hunter, and Tevin. Mm. But then again, I'm not even looking at the other two tribes. I think, what's Q's tribe again?
Janu.
Purple tribe, I can't believe it. Janu, yeah. See, I don't think any of that three can win just because I feel like modern survivor players realize that, if you're coming from a minority tribe, sure bet to basically win the game most of the time. I mean, wasn't that literally how Jam Jam won?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The last season,
and they voted Carson out at Final Four.
And the last season that these people saw was season 44. So they've just come off watching Jam Jam, Carson, and Carolyn go from three right to the Final Four and then eventually win the game. So that's fresh in the mind. I just don't think they'll let it happen.
Correct. Exactly. And I think that's a I feel like you can almost rule those three out. Yeah. As much as I do actually really enjoy those three, I don't think they can win. I think we're getting some really good screen time from the three of them as well, which just makes me think that, you know, they're going to kind of finish with a solid edit, probably finish around early to mid-merge, most of them.
Yeah.
And there'll be a battle between the other two tribes at the end. I could be completely wrong. But and so, yeah, when I look at the other tribes, I'm like, there's just a lot of duds and I don't know.
People can rule out straight away, I think.
Yeah.
There's not a big pool of winners there, I don't see.
No. Like, Tim's an interesting one. And he, to his credit, I think he kind of played this episode well, went on the journey, didn't compete. Got that information from Q. He might have an alliance come to merge, you know, flip the switch on Gem there. Like, that's an interesting one for me because I'm like, this could develop into more. Charlie getting a lot of screen time, don't see him as a winner, could develop into a winner, though. Like, there's a couple of characters that maybe be on the edge, but I think, yeah, it's an interesting season in trying to pick that out because there's just no real standouts.
And I think that's because we've seen so much of, you know, the Janu and the Banu of it all that people haven't had a chance to really shine yet, especially strategically. We've had really one vote apart from the Janu people. So I think obviously the next few weeks, especially as the merge sets up and the early merge votes are so pivotal nowadays that someone might just emerge out of the pack and be the front runner. And can they make it to the end? Will they get gunned down late? Who's going to be the one that takes their place? So I do think Hunter and Tevin are probably the two that I'm sort of most confident on for winning. But like you said, there's a few in the mix. Maria, perhaps. I do like Ben.
Yeah, I guess that's the redeeming factor of this season is like we don't really know where this is headed. So fingers
crossed.
No, that's
what we want. That's what we want. All right, let's move on to predictions.
Previously on Survivor.
And let's see what we said last week.
Okay, next week, I think it's right. It's a NAMI, they go. I'm going to go with our guest from last week, Michael, and I'm going to say Soda goes home next
Soda
week.
Got to go to. Yeah, Buckle's no good yet again. That's what you get for not being here, mate. Horrible choice. Soda and the NAMI tribe safest houses this week.
Yeah, I don't know. I read it as Soda too, so yeah. I would have said
all right,
the
let's
same.
See what I had to say last week.
Yeah, I probably think something similar. Can the Janu finally win the challenge? I mean, probably not, but surely they're due. So I'll go with NAMI losing. And Venus, again, I'll go with her to go home.
Yeah, also another bum-bum cross. Venus, yeah, safe as again with the NAMI. And according to Eli, going on to win the season. So perhaps I was way off the mark.
I was very upset when you said that. I was listening to your podcast last week, and when you said Venus, I was like, don't down my girl like that.
Don't take it away from me.
But I'm glad you're wrong.
Let's have a look at what we're going to say about next week. What do you think is going to happen next time on Survivor?
Next time on Survivor.
I'm going to go Soda is going to get the pre... What do they call
Mergatory.
It? Mergatory?
Fake merge, yeah.
I'm going to go with Soda because she's just got a very over-the-top negative edit. So I will be surprised if it's not her, actually, but I could be completely wrong. Yeah. I don't know, though. Maybe I'm completely wrong. It's hard. Like, that boot before, like, who would have predicted Sydney from...
41?
Was it season 41? Like, who would have predicted that? Like... It's a hard one. I'm just going purely off edit-wise. I'm like, people are talking bad stuff about Soda, and that has been continuous from, like, episode 2 now. So
I think reading the edit too much. Let's think about it logically. We've got 13 people in the game. We're going to do a challenge with 6-on-6, and one person's going to pick a tribe. So we want a losing tribe of 6. We're going to go to tribal council where everyone will vote, and 6 people are up for the vote. Now, if you're anyone in that game... when there's only 6 people up for the vote, you want to get an easy consensus vote where everyone can pile on one person. And to me, it has to be one of the Janus where everyone's like, we don't know these people. We can all put it on. And the one person that stands out for me is because of Banu, labeled Kenzie the mastermind. Kenzie's this huge threat in front of everyone. We can all get behind that vote because we don't know her. We don't care. We don't need her number. We're going for Kenzie. For me, Kenzie's the fake merge boot. Kenzie will go home.
Yeah, I don't hate that, actually. That's a decent prediction.
No edging in that, mate.
I don't hate it.
All right, let's move on to the eulogies and let's talk about Jem. I mean, you've discussed her at length a little bit about her, you know, as a winner candidate. Give me your thoughts as Jem as a player, Jem as a character, any memorable moments, and will she return to our screens?
Memorable moment, definitely... hiding like the beware advantage back. I'm not sure if it was the smartest move, but great TV. And it was fun. I mean, it's kind of what we need in these episodes, especially with some of these diabolical casting choices. Anyway, but I think she was great. I think definitely one of my more entertaining sort of players we've had this season. And it's fitting that she went after the legend that is Banu. Almost for, I guess, going too hard. So, yeah, I kind of said my piece earlier. I did enjoy her. Will she return? Probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised if they would put her on, like, a second chance season of some description. She's one of those new, pre-merged new era players that kind of got a lot of, you know, attention online, and a lot of people seem to have enjoyed her, so who knows? But I will say no, but
yeah, I could see it because, you know, she went out with an idol, she had like a bit of an edge to her in terms of like gameplay, like she seemed savvy, but perhaps her approach was not the best. As a player, yeah, like she's a bit heavy-handed. She sort of didn't socially come across to her tribe mates in a way that was comforting and, I guess, reassuring. She was really direct to the point, and it sort of painted her in a bad light. As a character, I did enjoy that about her. I like the players that aren't perfect players, that like have flaws, that try things, that are doing something. So I enjoyed the whole thing with the Beware Advantage. So Jem will be... I mean, will I remember her? Probably not. But I enjoyed her for the two episodes where she was a central character for us this week and last week. And, yeah, I like... She probably won't return, but it would not surprise me. Memorable moment, yeah, is definitely the Beware Advantage, the fake weather. They're digging through all the roots and these massive holes. Like, that were digging for hours, days. A lot of fun. And just sort of seeing her laughing confessionals when Maria's getting bitten by ants and Maria's all excited. I found the Beware Advantage. It's a lot of fun. It added a bit to the episode last week. So that's Gem for me. All right, we'll move on to the Buckles Buff of the episode. Who's the player of the week for you, Eli?
I'm actually going to go with Q here because clutched that much-needed immunity win, you know, right at the death, essentially. It was very close, but he clutched it. It was very important. You could tell how much it meant for him and his tribe. So Kenzie, Tiffany as well. So, yeah. I think Q, not just based on that, but that's the first part of that. Then, of course, he's obviously gotten enough trust between the girls to go on the journey. He's gone to the journey and he said to the guys, look, here's an idea for merge. Let's reconnect. He knows it's coming up next. We've already discussed that, so I won't go too much into it. But I think he did the right thing there, especially coming from a minority. So fair play to him there. And then also not actually competing as well in the advantage was probably the right thing as well, because if he did, that probably put some distrust in the other two. So I think that he's done the right thing there. He's done everything correct in this episode, from winning that challenge, clutching it, getting himself on the journey, making those future plans. Yeah, I thought I'd kind of pick an outside the box pick. I was also gonna another outside the box pick I was thinking was Tim. I think nice. Q for me.
Just on that challenge. I love that slow motion at the end. And I was honestly, what we said in the new era, we saw it with JD in 41. I was waiting for the bag to miss the thing and the other team win. It would have been hilarious. Just a full super slow mo. But yeah, credit to him. He got it. It was a nice dramatic moment. You say out of the box pick, Tim. That's where mine's going. I'm going with Tim this week. It was a week of.
There you go.
Yeah. Not many people stood out in terms of good gameplay. A couple of bad things, but I thought Tim had a solid episode. I don't know if you saw him in the challenge on that, like the obstacle course. This man must do parkour or something. He flew around that course. He was keeping up with Hunter, and Tim does not look like an athlete, but wow, he was impressive. He has banned his tight alliance where, like, they're seemingly like unbreakable somehow. Like, we haven't seen it throughout the whole thing. During the journey, he says, yeah, Maria's my number one as well. So he seems to be somewhat insulated. He didn't get the numbers on him, which is great when, you know, Jem was targeting him or at one stage. He goes on the journey. He sort of, I guess, bonds with Q and Hunter. There's something there. And, you know, when Jem's interrogating him, he holds firm. He doesn't, like, give her anything to work with. He doesn't snap back. He sort of reads that she's going a bit crazy. Let's get the votes on Jem. And I guess it gets to happen. So Tim gets a buff. Which takes us to the buff leaderboard, with Tim gets his first buff on one alongside Maria, Banu, Kenzie. Tiffany's on two, and Q extends his lead out to four. So Q's racking him up early. He's got a lot of airtime. You know, he's in the disaster tribe, but make hay while the sun shines. Q right to the top.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's sort of all we have for this week. I guess we can spend a bit of time talking about Sydney Survivor. And you said season one went well. Season two was filmed. When was that? A few months ago, I guess.
Yeah, end of last year, October, October. So, very well. Very interesting season. Broke a Survivor record, wow. So stay tuned. Editing's underway. Editing team working on it. Should come out sometime mid to late this year. Just depends. Don't have a date just yet. Probably August, potentially. We do want to film season three around October. So I'm sort of pushing away some of that season two stuff so I can get prepped for season three, have a teamwork on season, finishing off season two, and then for season three, yeah, get that started. And ran in October. Early expressions of interest are open for that season, so you can find that on Sydney Survivor. It's literally just a name, email, contact number, so then when applications do open, we can send that to you. But yeah, really excited. Got a new theme as well for that one. Season two has a new theme as well. We're doing introverts versus extroverts, so it's a very exciting theme. Lots of changes, maybe some familiar faces that you might have seen in the community. And
exciting times ahead. I think we are going to do a pre-season preview again like last season with you, so stay tuned for that. I guess that'll probably be after season 46 finishes. All right, guys, that's all we've got for this episode. Check us out on Facebook at Survivor Buffs, Blindsides and Banter, on Instagram at Survivor_3BS, on X at Survivor3BS, and on TikToks at Buffs, Blindsides and Banter. I've been Mac. He's been Eli. You've been great. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Eli.
Peace. In the middle.
Peace. Peace out. See you guys. See you next week. If you haven't seen it already, the Australian Survivor Finale podcast is out with Michelle Pierce-Denneman. Check it out. A lot of fun. Good 2 hours discussing the whole season, so check that out. See you next week, guys. Buckles will be back, I'm assured. But am I confident? Absolutely not. See ya.
Is this Survivor? What? Bro, are you listening to Survivor? Guys, I think this is Survivor. Dude, you must really like Survivor.